Hi everyone, welcome to All Things Creative. I'm Linda Riesenberg-Fissler and I'm your host today, and I'm really, really excited because I have Honoré Corder with me. And Honoré is let me get the next screen up so you can see her. There she is. So Honoré is an author of dozens of books, and we're going to talk a little bit about her creative process and what she has gone through and in her life and how she got to where she is today and all that good stuff. And I just want to go over real quick her bio for those of you who are listening on just the podcast and not watching this on YouTube. So Honoré is the author of a dozen books, including You Must Write a Book and the Prosperous Writer book series, Like a Boss book series, Vision to Reality, Business Dating, the Successful Single Mom book, If Divorce is a Game, There Are Rules, and The Divorced Phoenix. She's also Hal Elrod's business partner in the Miracle Morning book series. She's also a business coach. She coaches professionals, writers, and aspiring nonfiction authors who want to publish their books to bestseller status, create a platform, and develop multiple streams of income. She does all sorts of magic. And I love this comment. So you're a badass, huh,
That's right. That's right.
Honoré? Yeah. So welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a delight to be with you.
Yeah. So I just popped up the screen with all your books, but I want to talk a little bit about your journey first, how you got to where you are, because there's a divorce series in there. So I'm assuming you're speaking from experience
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your journey.
I think you probably want me to talk about my writing journey. Yes.
Yes, please. We don't need to do personal stuff. So.
Sure. Awesome. Well, I started writing books when I met Mark Victor Hansen, who's the co-creator of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and he asked me what I did, and I told him that I was very proud of myself too. I said I'm a coach and a speaker, and he said, "Oh, honey, everybody's a coach and a speaker. You must write a book." And then we had further discussion, and I decided to take his advice and write my first book. And what happened to me is sometimes what happens to people that I work with is that they write their book and it becomes their first book because they get the fever. They decide that they want to write more books. And that's what happened to me. I just kept getting other book ideas and kept writing my books. And along the way, I write nonfiction. I keep threatening to write fiction, but I have not been able to figure out when I would fit that in with all of the things that I'm already passionately doing.
Right.
In any event, I wrote about my life experiences. So my books are a kind of my own scrapbook, if you will, of my life's experiences and what I learned from those experiences. And I would find that as I would go through something, I would figure it out. And then people would come to me for advice about being a single mom or going through a divorce or growing their business or growing their network marketing business or publishing more books. And I just keep writing books on the subjects that I feel like I have something to say that could contribute to the lives of those people who would read my books.
Right. So you went from what, like you said, you're not a fiction writer. You're a nonfiction writer. Tell me a little
Nonfiction.
bit. Yeah. Let's start with talking a little bit more in depth with Miracle Morning, with that you wrote with Hal. And I'm interested in that from the standpoint of there's a book that a lot of my artist friends and some of my writer friends actually have written, and you probably know it. The Art Spirit is a book. That basically talks
I
about,
have not heard of that.
oh, okay, we check it out because I think you like it. So, but anyway, the Art Spirit
Okay.
is,
Okay. All right.
it's a book that talks about, setting time aside, like when you first get up in the morning to be creative and really start those creative juices flowing. And it doesn't really go into process so much as it deals with like a creative process, dealing with the creative process itself. So
Got it.
talk us a little bit, tell us a little bit about Miracle Morning in that book series.
So the Miracle Morning was written by Hal, and I met him, I don't know now, 4 or 5 years ago now, and I have a personal philosophy, and one of the tenets of my personal philosophy is that if you want something, you have to give it away. And I realized that I wanted more 5-star reviews for my books, and yet as a great consumer of books, I will listen to an entire audiobook in every 2 or 3 days. And then I'm also reading 2 or 3 books at a time. So one nonfiction, wow, one fiction book. And I wasn't taking the time to write 5-star reviews when I could, right? So I don't ever write a 3, 2, or 1-star review. I will only write 4 and 5-star reviews. I just figure if I don't have something nice to say, I won't say anything.
No,
unless someone asks for my feedback, unless someone sends me their book and they are asking for my feedback and they give me their American Express card, then I will give them my feedback. But other than that, I just tend to not say anything. In any event, after I realized, I had that realization that I was reading a lot of books and I wasn't taking the time to give away what I wanted, the next book I read was The Miracle Morning, and I wrote a review on Amazon and another review on Goodreads. And Hal saw my review, and he had an idea at the time for 2 things, one, to have a series, and one, to have one of the books, one of the Miracle Morning books, to be for single moms. And so he reached out to me originally to ask me if I would be interested in writing The Miracle Morning for single moms. And then secondarily, as we were having our conversation, I have the Successful Single Mom book series. There's 6 books in that series. He realized that I already had a successful series and he wanted one, and that perhaps I was more qualified, these are his words, that I was more qualified to help him to produce a series than he was. And so we basically got married on our first date. He suggested that we could do the series together, and we drew up a contract that basically said we're going to take it one book at a time, and if we like each other, then we'll stay married. And we are about to release 2 more books this year, and we've released 12 so far.
Great.
12 total series books. And so I run that book business for Hal.
Okay.
He just had his bout with cancer and was basically absent for an entire year. And I just kind of picked up the baton and ran with it and managed to keep that business going and thriving. So I run the Miracle Morning book series with for Hal, right? Depending on how you look at it. And then I also do my own as well.
Oh, cool. And it's about, basically, I'm assuming that, you know, getting up every day and making things happen that you want to make happen, right? I mean, that's the miracle, right?
Right. So yeah, the miracle morning is comprised of 6 practices that Hal originally went looking for. What are the practices of the most successful people?
Okay.
And he identified the life savers, the silence, which is another word for meditation, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and then scribing, which is another word for journaling. So he came up with this acronym, the savers, and then he assigns an amount of time for each one. So 20 minutes for reading, or 20 minutes for exercise, 5 minutes for journaling, those sorts of things, right? So you can do your miracle morning intentionally first thing in the morning by getting up an hour earlier, because you're not just getting up earlier, you're getting up better.
Right.
And then the books in the series are catered toward individual groups of people. So we have the Miracle Morning for real estate agents. So it's what, you know, using the savers and then also the best practices of the most successful real estate agents, right? We have the Miracle Morning for writers. So we have the savers, and then what do the most successful writers do in any discipline, whether you're a copywriter, a screenwriter, a fiction writer, a nonfiction writer, a columnist, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do the most successful writers do? What are those practices? And recognizing that most, right? 80-20 rule always applies, I believe. But most people, their best time of day is first thing in the morning.
Right.
If you take the time to move the needle first thing in the morning, then you're fine. My husband actually is a night owl. So about the time I'm crashing, he's coming alive. So he's in the 20%. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm the lark and he's the night owl.
Yeah. The reason why I'm
totally fine.
Yeah, the reason why I'm laughing is because I'm a night owl too, and I always I'll get up and you know I'm in your Prosperous Writers, I think, book group on Facebook, and I think we're actually friends on Facebook as well. And I get up and I see you in my newsfeed, and I'm like, holy cow! And I'm like sitting there at like 9 o'clock going, and she's an hour behind me. How is she doing this? So.
Right. So I get up really early. I get up really early, except today in Texas, we had epic thunderstorms all night long. So hail and thunderstorms and emergency alerts. And so my phone was going off all night long and it's thundering and lightning. So not today. I didn't get up early today. I got up at 7. Got up at 7 today because I finally got to sleep. But for the most part, I get up between 4:30 and 5 in the morning. And in those first few hours, I do the bulk of my work for the entire day in terms of my writing process, my creativity, those sorts of things. And then the rest of the day is, shenanigans and some other work that I do.
Yeah, and you have a family, right? So you're raising children and so you're
They
trying to
all want to
balance
eat
that.
every day and they want love every day and they want clean things every day. So, and all of that takes time.
And I mean, it's finding a balance, and that's, it's one thing I guess I've been kind of, I don't have children. I have my husband and I live in Ohio, and so we're pretty free to do what we want and focus on what we want to do and rearrange time. But I mean, I can see that, I definitely agree with probably the first 3 hours after I get out of bed is my most creative and most dedicated to my work. So I could see how that falls into place. Tell us about, I think you, I don't know which ones come first, and I apologize for that. Is it the prosperity series that comes first, or the Write Like a Boss, your most recent?
Write Like a Boss is my most recent series with Ben Hale. I did the Prosperous Writer series. I started that myself, and then I wrote three books in that series with Brian Meeks. So there's five books total in that series. And then the Like a Boss series is Write Like a Boss, Publish Like a Boss, and Market Like a Boss. So Ben is a very successful fiction author, and I'm a successful nonfiction author, and we have what we call our coffee and conversation in book form about how to own and run your book business
Okay, I didn't catch.
successfully. What goes into that?
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the fiction writer. Is that, did you say Sam?
Ben Hale.
Oh, done. Okay, and then so you're looking at that from both this nonfiction and fiction side when you're looking
Correct.
to be. Oh, great, great. Because that's one of the questions I was going to ask you. I'm a fiction writer, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of support out there that I can find for nonfiction things. So tell us, and I know I have a lot of nonfiction writers who are kind of following me. So tell us more about that joint writing that you've done. That's the Prosperity for Writers. That's, is that
So
what
I
you?
did Prosperity for Writers. I did the first book in that series, the first two books in that series myself, and then I wrote with Brian Meeks three books in that series. So we
Okay.
did the Nifty 15, the Prosperous Writer's Guide to Making More Money, and the Prosperous Writer's Guide to Finding Readers. And
Okay.
then with Ben Hale, most recently, I did Write Like a Boss, Publish Like a Boss, and Market Like a Boss. And Brian Meeks is also a successful fiction writer. So all of the books. All of my books except about writing, except for You Must Write a Book and I Must Write My Book. Those are specifically for predominantly for business people who want to write a book that
Okay.
will position them as the expert in their field. But the other books are all for fiction or nonfiction.
Okay, cool. So let's talk a little bit about creating a platform then, if we can, because it seems like a kind of a natural flow.
Sure.
So tell us, number one, in your mind, what does creating a platform mean? And number two, how would one go about that? And if you could, I know you're mostly nonfiction, but you have your fiction friends. So if you could throw some if good advice that way too, that would be
Sure.
great.
Sure. So in my mind, creating a platform is creating a position that people understand, like they understand what it is that you do, and that lends itself to the right people following you and getting excited about your work and going from I don't know you to I know who you are, to I like you, to I love you, to I'm a fan, to I'm a super fan. And the super fan is someone who would buy anything that you do. They're excited about anything that you do. So creating a platform is a mechanism to go from you're a complete stranger to you're a super fan, and You'll buy anything that I sell you.
Mm-hmm.
You'll read anything that I write. You'll attend anything that I put out.
Right.
I think the elements of that are, in no particular order, but in a particular order, authenticity, consistency, persistency, being approachable, and being good at what you do, writing specifically for writers, but writing books, articles, or stories that people love to read and they can't wait to read the next thing. That once they get into your universe and they discover you and they discover your universe, they can't wait to go to the next thing. What's the next thing? Right? So every single book that I've written, every single book that you've written is a point of entry for a complete stranger.
Mm-hmm.
They stumble upon you because generally the number one way people find a book to read is through recommendation. So they stumble upon you because they're recommended the book somehow, mm-hmm. even if it's through an Amazon ad, right? Amazon's recommending the book or a friend is recommending the book. They enter your universe and you have to make very quick work of, ooh, I could like this person. I resonate with this person. They seem cool, or their stories seem cool, their characters seem interesting. So every so often I'll discover a new author, and as soon as I discover that new author, I'm hopeful that they have a series. It's like watching a new show on television, right? When the season one ends, you're like, oh no.
Right, exactly.
I really wish network television would become more like Netflix, where they would just say, bam, here's the season, instead of every Tuesday at 8.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So as a writer, you are looking for your avatar, which is an avatar is another word, is the term for your ideal reader. So who is the person that you're writing your book for? Who are they? What is that person? What does that person look like? What are their preferences? What do they like to read? What are they looking for? If you're writing nonfiction, what is the problem that you're solving? If it's fiction, then what's the story that they want to read?
Mm-hmm.
And then continuing to put out that content and getting better and better and better with everything that you produce.
Right. Yeah. Great, great advice. Great, great way to lay that out. I think that is probably the most concise way that I've heard platform described in all of my podcasts. Oh. So yeah. So thank you for that. The series comment that you made is really interesting too, because you're starting to see even like network television now with their on-demand stuff. So you can wait to the end of the season. Of course, you're waiting forever for that to happen with network TV.
Correct.
But you can sit down and binge it if you don't want to watch it every Sunday at 9 or whatever the time is. But the interesting thing with Netflix is, and of course you have to understand, and I've interviewed movie producers, and I have a friend that's a director that I've interviewed before. And, you know, they come into these series and you get exposed to them and you get yanked in and you start binging them. But I have this great, like, when it comes to the end of the episode, I can watch it in a couple days. And then it's like, oh, now I have to wait another 6 months until the next season comes out, the next series.
Right.
With it. Yeah. So you still have that. Yeah. But in the meantime, what's really interesting is you see all of that, there seems to be a hype that never stops in that period from when they drop their first 8 episodes or however many episodes it is to when the next one comes out. And let's just take The Crown, for example. You know, they've found so many different ways to keep The Crown in front of people. And the latest one, naturally, is the pay difference between the Queen, Claire Foy, and Matt Smith, the person that plays Prince Philip. But still, I mean, that's now all of a sudden The Crown is in front of people, and it's like, well, what, you know, the if you haven't entered that point, there's this whole thing of, well, should she get paid less? Let's go out and look at the series and see, you know. So it's interesting the way that the hype keeps going on with that. And I think that's where a lot of us, us being writers, need to think beyond. We certainly want to keep our super fans happy, and it's easy to engage with super fans, but it's harder to get to that one person to get them to step inside your world and look in at your books. At least I think that way.
Well, you know, it's funny that you should say that. I actually find that it's I actually have a very good girlfriend now. Like, we're girlfriends
mm-hmm.
because she read You Must Write a Book and then wrote me this long email.
Aww.
And just but was conversational in the email. Like, I read the book and I wasn't sure I could do it, and then I got into it and realized that I could, and now I'm on this journey, and I'm sure you're never going to read this email. I'm sure you're some assistant. Hi, assistant, right? Like, she just kind of was like having fun with it. And I wrote her back, and she said, I never in a million years thought that you would write me back. Well, my rule is, if someone writes me an email, unless it's rude,
mm-hmm.
I will write you back. It mm-hmm. might take me a minute, right? I'm busy, but I write back every single person that writes to me. I now have a French tutor, because this woman had left her husband being abused. Her son was being abused. She lives in France. I'm learning French. And so she wrote to me, not knowing that I'm studying French, and said, you know, I read all of your single mom books. I read your divorce books. You saved my life. You gave me the courage to leave. You saved my son's life. Like, it was a very intimate thank you letter.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, you know, this is what I do for a living, and da, 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 da. And I wrote her back and I said, I'm learning French. Oh, I'm so excited to connect with you. And I'm so grateful that you've left. I'm so grateful that you and your son are safe. And so then we ended up having a conversation, and now I've hired her to be my French tutor, coach, teacher, whatever you want to call it. So out of those conversations can come not just a super fan or a fan or someone who reads your books, but someone who you actually can become friendly with. And of course, those are two examples out of many, many. You know, I have a folder in my email for days when I'm not feeling amazing. It's called love.
Hmm.
And it's just love that I get from readers. It's like, oh, I don't feel like writing today, but boy, the thing that I write could help somebody. I better get to writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my rule is always, if someone writes to me, to write them back. If someone comments on, you know, Instagram is the, you know, our photo album, if you will, our present day photo album. We don't print it. We don't go to the Walgreens and get our photos developed anymore. We just take a selfie or take a picture of something and put it on Instagram. And you can look back over years of your life from being on Instagram, and people can follow that. And so when they comment, I'll go in and thank them for their comment or heart their comment and just interact with them. And people are very surprised that I'm interacting, but you, the listener, are in my place, and your readers are going to be just as surprised if you interact with them. And that actually will engender them to being your fan, to being someone who really likes you, to being that super fan, because there are a lot of people who don't respond for whatever reason. And that's kind of a bummer.
Right.
They're missing an opportunity to take it from, you're this person over here that is untouchable, who's an author, who's, you know, blah, 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 to you're a person who answered my email. What? That's amazing. I highly encourage interaction with people. People are cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually enjoy book signings and being face to face with people who are, you know, approaching me to read my book and have conversations with them. And, you know, I am also open to emails and things like that. I don't get a lot of them. Maybe I'm not sure why, but maybe they don't know that I am. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe one reason why.
Do you ask them to write you?
I do in the fiction books. Yeah, I do at the end of the fiction.
You do at the end?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you write, if you love this book, tell me why you loved it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Under the about the author or, you know, author notes at the end or something like that. I usually put, you know, at the end of my fiction books, mine are kind of based in history, and it kind of asks the question, you know, can my three characters change the course of history? So it's set in 1970s, 1980s. And at the end of it, I just kind of come back and say, now you can see how this little program run by the CIA or whatever, da, da, da. And at the end of it, it's like, you know, what do you think? You know, tell me what you think. And here's my, you know, email, and drop me a line. And I haven't really had a number of people. I mean, I have some really great super fans who follow me on Facebook, and they keep asking when the next book comes out, and, you know, and things like that. And I keep saying, well, hold on, it's coming. You know, I'll give you a teaser, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I really do enjoy that. And you're absolutely right. Being approachable, like, would I have ever guessed that you would have come on my podcast? You know, if I would have listened to that no voice in my head, I never would have asked. But I asked you, you said yes, and here we are, right? What's the worst thing that could have happened?
Right.
I can't do it this month, maybe next month. You know, that would have been worse. The worst thing would have been no, but it would, you know, I would have also understood.
You would have survived.
Yeah, I would have survived.
Not that important.
Well, you know, it's just, you know, no isn't a killer, okay?
Funny because if you look at the world through the lens of everything that happens, mm-hmm. serves you, it's just sometimes the thing that happens sucks. But ultimately, it's for your highest good eventually. Yeah. So I can look back at my divorce, which when I was going through, it was the worst thing in the world. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, I got 10 books out of it. I have an awesome husband now. So it's not so bad. It actually turned out fine.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
You're sowing. We're all sowing the seeds of something better. Just sometimes it's obvious that it's awesome, and sometimes it isn't obvious how awesome it is until much later.
Exactly. What I was going to say was, it's like that old adage of, you know, when the door closes, the window opens. You know, you just have to look around and see, you know, what that path is, and just, you know, open that other door and walk through it. And yeah, looking back, hindsight's always 20/20. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. Are you writing another Like a Boss book, or?
So I'm writing a book called Stop Trying So Effing Hard.
Lovely.
That's what I'm working on right now. Well, and I really kind of struggled with the use of the swearing word, because I tend to swear sometimes more than others, but not generally in public. And I watch people twist themselves into a pretzel, trying to become what they think they're supposed to be in order to get the thing that they think they're supposed to want. And I have a philosophy that's a little bit different than that. And almost everyone I talk to is signed up to be the first reader. Like, I really want to hear what this book is going to say. So that's what I'm working on. My daughter's graduating from high school in 2 months' time, and then we're relocating from Texas to Nashville. And I got approached to co-author a book yesterday, and I'm not going to take that project on, but I have the Like a Boss series that's out there, working on some Miracle Morning books, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, so you work on multiple books at a time?
Well, I don't write the Miracle Morning books. I produce them.
Okay.
So I work with the co-authors to produce the book. So someone else is writing the book, and I'm the quarterback and the team captain and the coach.
Okay.
of that team. Yeah. I'm only writing one book right now.
Okay. Well, you say like you've written more one at a time. I'm only curious because it's like, I can only write one book at a time. Although my free writes, I'll just keep them going, you know, continually. So then I'll pull scenes out that could be used in the second book or the first book, but that's all still one theme, if you will. I find it really hard to try to work on two different things at the same time and be in that creative space for each of them at the same time. And I'm just curious, are you the same way, or are you able to split
them? I'm able to work on multiple projects at a time. Sometimes it's nice to be in something and feel like I have reached the end of that creativity for that particular project on that day, and then have something else to work on.
Okay.
So I do group coaching. I'm working on a group coaching for Based on You Must Write a Book. I do some coaching for a direct sales company because I have a background in direct sales. So I'm doing some like traditional business coaching for a company. I'm working with professionals who want to have their own book. So I just helped 14-time World Series of Poker champion Phil Hellmuth write his book, Positivity. And we got that published a couple of months ago. So I always have my fingers in a lot of pies. No 2 days are the same. Oh, for me, I like it that way.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. So I'm going to ask you a question, and if you don't want to talk about this, just say that and we'll move on. But
sure.
I noticed that
okay.
you, it's, and don't get scared. It's not that big a deal. It's, but I noticed that you have a link on your website, and I'm going to pull up the picture of your blog now. And we'll come back to the blog in a second. But there's a thing about an Amazon affiliate disclaimer. You have a link to that. You have a really good, I think you have a really good working relationship with Amazon and
I do.
An affiliation and things like that. Talk about that. Talk about how that, if you could tell us how that started and how that works.
Well, I don't know how it started. Amazon picked me from out of all the people that could have been chosen. I'm not sure how that happened. They reached out to me and originally because they were having a breakfast in New York City for the purposes of spreading the word that KDP was a platform on which many people could publish their books.
Okay.
And when I got invited to that breakfast, I asked them what was the purpose of the breakfast. It was for media. They invited traditional and online media to come, so Forbes and Fortune and lots of different bloggers and writers and those sorts of things were there to interview. There were five of us. There was James Altucher, Pat Flynn, Hal Elrod, and myself, and Guy Kawasaki. So there were five of us. I was the only woman, so that was kind of fun. And so I said, what's the purpose of the breakfast? And they said to raise the profile of KDP and that we want more people to write and publish books on Amazon. And what they wanted to do at that breakfast was feature each author's most recent book.
Okay.
Except that my most recent book at the time, I think, was, I don't remember, it was Divorced Phoenix, I think. So not really, I'm not a divorce expert per se. I don't speak on divorce. I do keynote speaking, but I don't speak on divorce necessarily. I wasn't looking to go down that rabbit hole, right, to make that my main platform. I'm sorry?
I said you wanted to move on. That's to something more positive. I mean, you're such a positive person.
I wrote If Divorce is a Game, These Are the Rules, because I see people who go through the divorce process and they are intent on destroying their ex when I think it's a blessing, right? It's a blessing. It's this crappy time that you go through, but you ultimately, if you play by these rules that I identified by talking to lots of divorce attorneys, then you will have the best of bad experience and then you'll move on and you'll become the divorce phoenix, which is right. rising from the ashes of your marriage and experiencing all of the cool things that happen after you go through a divorce. Once you get through that process, you realize you have the opportunity to reset your life like no other time. So that was my most recent book, but that wasn't what I wanted highlighted. And so it occurred to me that I could write a book about why everyone should write and publish a book. And that's what I'm very passionate about, is writing my first book, then became my second book, then became my 20th book, then became my 40th book, and I'm still writing, and my life is completely different, I believe, because I took the advice to write a book, and there is a lot of bad information, there's a lot of almost good information, right, out there,
yeah.
And there's a lot of conflicting information, and I've written almost 50 of my own books. I've produced a bunch more with Hal, and then I've worked with, you know, a couple dozen other authors to help them to produce a book that gives them what they want. So what some people sell is a program to publish a book so you can be a bestseller on Amazon, but what they don't share is how do you become a best earner with your book. Not only on Amazon, but on multiple platforms. In other words, I don't want to be an Amazon best-selling author for 1 hour in my obscure category. Neither do you. Neither do most of the people listening. But there are a lot of programs directed at people that say, oh, you just write this book. It'll take you 15 minutes. Just get it out there. And then you just have mailbox money forever. That's not exactly true. I wanted something that was very powerful and simple, but detailed in his approach to how someone could actually write and successfully professionally publish a book and earn money from that book for many years to come and help them to get increased recognition, raise their fees, right? You get all of these really cool bonuses from being an author, right? You can raise your fees and you have brand recognition and you are the authority because you are an author, blah, blah, blah. All of the things that you already know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I wrote You Must Write a Book, and Amazon liked that. They were happy that one of the five of the panelists had that idea to write a book of that nature, and have been very kind in, still, it's been a year and a half since that breakfast, it was October of 2016, have been very kind about promoting that book on my behalf and putting it in front of people because they felt like it was a quality product. But basically how my relationship with Amazon works is they ask me to do something and I say, yes, please. Thank you. May I have another? And that's how it works. And so it's a little less now than it used to be. I think they are constantly on the lookout for new people, right? That resonate with, right? You get tired of the same spokesperson, right? Even Maybelline gets a new spokesperson. Not that I was a spokesperson, but you understand, right? There's a turnover. So I've just been very grateful that they picked me out of all the people that they could pick. And I got book sales and connections and all sorts of wonderful press as a result of that connection.
Yeah,
and I love Amazon. Some people don't. Some people are very down on Amazon, but without Amazon, we couldn't self-publish. Amazon was the first to really kind of make it so that I could be a full-time writer.
Yeah. Yeah. Some folks have a love-hate relationship with them. I actually are somewhat exclusive with Amazon only because you know, I spend less time. They're the biggest retailer around, you know, on the web. So, you know, I go there, I manage everything through them as far as my books and everything being available, create space, creates the paperback, you know, all of that goes on there.
Everything is so great.
Yeah. And I sit there and I think, okay, why would I spend, if I could spend like 15, 20 minutes checking on book statuses, and I don't do that daily, but, you know, checking on that and working through them, and it gets out to a wide range of audience, a large number of people, because they are the number one retailer. I always ask my question, why would I spend 15 to 20 more minutes on every other platform that's out there that may not be selling as many books as Amazon will sell for me?
Correct. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. And then of course there's the argument of, but there's also people who absolutely hate Amazon and will never shop there, and you're missing that diagram, you know, that demographic. And I just always ask the person, well, if you can tell me that that demographic is bigger than what Amazon has, you might get me interested. So,
right. Yeah. Right. Until that time, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So in all, everything that you're doing, you also have time to write a blog. So, and I have a little screenshot up, and it has your last one is March 14th. So you still actually put blogs out on, it looks like a maybe 2 to 3 week basis, I guess. I'm looking at the last three.
Every two weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
Every 2 weeks or so. It just depends on when it's spring break and am I, what's happening. I have a regular schedule, right? My list expects emails on a pretty regular basis. I have several lists actually. So I have a list for, Honoré as a whole, right, which is from my business coaching days, I still email those people, even though I don't do as much of that anymore. I have a very large list. I stay in touch with them. And then I have the Prosperous Writer list, and then I have the You Must Write a Book list, because those are not the same person in my head, right? There's a little bit of crossover, but they're not the same person all the time. They're not the same avatar. So I create content for those people, but I have a system for creating my content. And once I've created a certain amount of content, then I reuse that content. I repurpose that content. So I'm not having to write as much fresh content now as I used to.
Right. Yeah. So is writer block real or is it not real?
Not for me. I developed a belief. I listened to Dan Kennedy talk years ago, before I was ever a writer, Linda, I heard him talk about how he needed to produce X number of words in a month's time. And his belief was, when he sits down to write, the words flow effortlessly through his fingertips. And I thought, well, that's pretty smart. I'm just going to take that on. And I've not ever experienced writer's block. I think our subconscious mind is very powerful, and I think we can program our subconscious mind to do pretty much anything. I have studied different philosophies and different books and science. Neuroplasticity is something that's very interesting to me, and you really can say something to yourself enough that yourself believes it, your inner self. And so I don't experience writer's block. When I have a chance to sit down and write, I write, like, almost on command. But I believe that's because I have that belief.
Yeah. Can you tell, like, I'm arguing in my own mind about this?
Yes. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. Everybody does. But it's kind of interesting. Is I think the closest I have ever come to a writer's block, because I'm an artist and a writer, was when something happened. My husband had an accident on his bicycle, and all of my attention had to go into making sure that he recovered to 100%. And, but basically at that point in time, it's like, go away, characters, don't talk to me in my head. I have other things I have to do. But that wasn't really a block to me. I mean, when I sat down to start writing again, I opened up Word to start doing that. And it was just like, I'm not going to worry about where I am on the current book. I am just going to sit down for the sake of writing and write. Whatever comes out. So I don't I don't look at it as a block. And it's not like, nobody's ever going to see this except me. So I start typing, I start writing, and whatever comes out, whatever the characters are saying to me in my head that, I went in and I just typed it out. So that was, if you want to call that a block, if you want to call that an excuse, go ahead. But, the bottom line was, it wasn't going to stop me from getting back to where I wanted to be and continue writing. And then artists will, from time to time, painters, I'm an oil painter. So oil painters will, from time to time, say, I can't do this. I can't stand in front of this white canvas. So then we sit there and play games, and we say, like, well, okay, we'll tone it orange. And that somehow is going to make you able to go paint, And I always end up arguing with people and going, no, you're just bored. You need to try something different. That's all that was. That was, I'm going to put this underpainting of sienna on the canvas, and that'll help me get over my block. No, it's just giving you something exciting to do. It's making it exciting again.
Right.
I don't look at it as a block either. So, I guess I'm kind of like you on your side with, I think that we try to find excuses for not doing things and call it a block is kind of where I kind of come out on that one.
Well, I've never been to my doctor, and I was like, I have a sore throat and a headache. And he's like, I have doctor's block today. I just can't. I can't even. Right? Like, I've not ever heard it other than writers or artists kind of say, oh, I just don't have it. And yet there are so many people who don't have it. And yes, I think there's an awful lot of excuse making going on. Everyone's human. Everyone has an ebb and a flow.
Right.
I read a great book recently by Daniel Pink called When, and it talks about the rhythm of life and the rhythm of things, and how if you're a lark and you get up early, about 6 or 7 hours after you've gotten up, you have this lull. And that's a really good time to take what he calls the nappuccino, which I love. I try to nappuccino every day. It's where you take 200 milligrams of caffeine, or you drink a cup of coffee, and then you take a 25-minute nap. You lay down and you close your eyes and you just rest. And you give your brain and your body a minute to just recharge.
Mm-hmm.
And then you make it through that lull, and then you go into your next period of creativity. I think a lot of people are running like they're being chased by the ball in Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
All the time. Like, they wake up and they wait till the last minute to wake up instead of getting up intentionally and setting the tone of their day, and they run the entire day. And then they wonder why they're exhausted and not creative. I do think that to be more creative, you have to have full batteries. You have to get good rest. and you have to eat good food and you have to move your body, right? Exercise and keep your blood flowing. If you're expecting lots of creativity in just a few minutes time every day when you're exhausted and burnt out, probably not going to happen.
Right.
I think there's a lot of factors that go into whether someone feels like they can be creative or they don't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I had this really interesting situation happen on my painting side, on my artist side. I was painting with a brush. I was being mentored and by a number of people, actually, well-known artists and all this. And I just had like way too much information being processed into my mind, being, you know, just like given to me. It was somewhat overwhelming. And all of a sudden it was like, I couldn't paint with a brush. And I'm not saying it's an excuse. Okay. But it's just like, I pick up a brush and it just wasn't flowing. The creativity just wasn't flowing. So I said, well, you know what? I'm gonna put the brush down. I'm gonna pick up a palette knife and I'm gonna start painting with palette knives and see what happens. And that's when my breakthrough happened, right? You know, it wasn't a block.
Yeah.
It was a great breakthrough. And now all of a sudden it's like the last couple weeks I've been painting and it's like, I'm picking up my brush more. And I had one of my artist friends came in to teach a workshop here where I live. And it was really interesting because I told her, she was like, you can't, she goes, can you paint with a brush? And I'm like, can I paint with a brush? Probably. And I'm like, but I'm more comfortable with my palette knives. And she's like, and we had a conversation about, you know, that whole breakthrough I had with the palette knife and how I can't paint with a brush. And I was the one saying I can't paint with a brush. Okay. Nobody else was saying that. Mm-hmm. I was the one saying it. And so it was really kind of interesting because she said, she picked up one of my brushes and she said, handed it to me. And she says, just try to paint this with a brush. Cause I need to understand this. She was fascinated that I had this, if you want to call it a block, that I had this thing going on. And she was a very intelligent lady. I love her to death. And she says, just do it. And I'm like, okay. And she was watching me and she came over to me later and we got in the car and we were driving back. She was staying at my house with us. And she says, I want to tell you something. And I said, what's that? And she said, the reason why you aren't painting with a brush? And I said, yeah. She goes, it's because you're holding it like a pen. And I was like, oh, she says, yeah. So you're tapping into the author and the two worlds. While you have a creative process, the two worlds are different. So you're holding your pen, you're holding your brush like a pen, trying to paint with your pen. And I was like, no, that's real interesting. And so we sat there and kind of got, you know, waxing philosophical, if you want, you know, it just started talking.
Sure.
But, you know, ever since she said that, she said, try holding your brush differently. So then I made a conscious effort to hold the brush differently. And all of a sudden now I'm painting with a brush as well as a palette knife. So now I have this, you know, great other tool that's making it more interesting for me. But I would never have, I never would call that a block. So, you know, it was something, there was something wrong that I needed to figure out what it was and I needed help figuring it out. But, you know, it was never really a block, but it was really interesting when that happened. I mean, that breakthrough with the palette knife and then the breakthrough with the brush. I mean, and that you can almost, you know, everybody that I talk to that on my writer's side are going, yeah, but I don't, you know, I don't get where you're going with this with writing. And it's like, pick up a pencil instead of a pen and see what happens, or start typing instead of, you know,
go to a coffee shop or stay home or go to a park, right? There are lots of different ways you can listen to different music.
Right.
There's lots of different ways you can switch up writing to make it so that you can get the flow going. Yeah.
Right. It all comes back to the desire of wanting to do the thing that is that you want to do. So if you want to paint, that desire's got to be there. If you want to write, that desire's got to be there. And I don't think anything else stands in the way. So I think we're really similar in that whole philosophy, which, you know, I sometime when you get to Nashville or something, I'm going to have to come down and we'll go have a drink or something and talk, because I think we think a lot alike. So
excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're coming close to wrapping up here. So I want to give you an opportunity if there's anything else that you'd like to say to the listeners out there at this point.
Oh, gosh. I think the thing that occurs to me is that if you want it, you can have it. If you want to be a full-time writer, you can write. Like, there's the only thing standing in the way of you is you. most of the time. And there's always a way if you're committed to just keep looking until you find it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
There's a way to write more. There's a way to figure something out. There's a way to monetize it. There's a way to make it easier or better or faster. You just have to just keep looking for it. Look for the thing that you want and don't stop looking and doing until you figure it out.
Great advice. That's the one thing that I think keeps me going all the time is just, you know, I get out of bed in the morning and it's like, okay, so what am I going to work on today? What creative thing can I do today? And then there's the list of what needs to get done, but that always happens later. The creative stuff always comes first. So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Honore, for being here, being a guest on All Things Creative. I really, really appreciate your time and, you know, keep in touch. And if there's anything we can ever do for you over here, let us know.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun to chat with you.
Yeah, it has. It's been a blast. And I will send links to this to you when we're all through. And hopefully you can share it out with your network as well. So coming up.
I will do it.
Okay, great. Thanks. Coming up on All Things Creative is on April 4th, we'll be talking with a sculptor, the first sculptor on our show, actually, Bridget Mongian. And I probably didn't pronounce her last name right, but we'll get that right on April 4th when I talk to her. She's creating a 150th anniversary of Alice in Wonderland. She's creating a bunch of sculptures that you can interact with. And she's going to tell us about that and some of the other work that she has done. And then Michael Harding, our colorist, our paint producer over in the United Kingdom, is going to join us on the show on April 11th. And we're going to talk about his projects and his new colors that he is coming out. And then Mary Castillo will be joining us. She's a writer and she has a unique way of reaching her readers using a podcast and some other unique things that she does. And she's going to come on the show on April 12th and talk to us about that. So again, thank you, Honore, and thank you for being here and all you do. So we appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Okay. Bye, everyone. Take care.